Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. On May 1st, 1886, workers across the United States called for a general strike, a strike that calls on all workers, regardless of their union affiliation and even if they are non-union workers. They wanted to achieve a guarantee of an 8-hour workday for those involved in industrial trade. Up to that point, there were no limits on how many hours that owners and management could force an employee to work in a day. Workers walked off the job, refused to work until a universal 8-hour day was achieved. 30,000 to 40,000 workers in Chicago alone participated in a strike action. Up to 80,000 workers marched in solidarity in the city. The call for a strike was so successful in drawing people into the streets that the police used violence to try to suppress it. On May 3rd, police opened fire on a crowd of protesters and killed two strikers. On May 4th, a bombing in Haymarket Square during a large rally on the city's west side killed several workers and police officers. The police again fired on the rally, and they killed four protesters and they wounded dozens in the ensuing chaos. The celebration of May Day began as commemoration of this tragedy, which quickly became known as the Haymarket Massacre, and it was first celebrated in 1890 after a call by the International Working Man's Association at their meeting in Paris. In the following decades, as the later labor movement strength began to grow, the call for international working class solidarity and recognition of the struggles of the working class were received and embraced around the world on May Day. Now, on September 16th last year, a few hundred Adbusters readers, Twitter enthusiasts, New York City socialists and radicals, and lots of other folks, but just a few hundred joined the call and went down to Occupy Wall Street. They were pushed back to Zuccotti Park, and there they made their stand. Now, that was only 8 short months ago. Liberty Plaza was born. On the evening of October 26th last year, in Frank Ogawa Plaza, members of the peaceful resistance movement called Occupy Oakland were brutalized by the Oakland Police Department. Iraq veteran Scott Thomas Olson was shot in the head with a tear gas can, and it was done on purpose. On November 17th last year, over 700 marchers from Occupy Wall Street were arrested crossing the Brooklyn Bridge. That, pardon me, is singularly the largest arrest for protesters in one sitting ever in this country. With Occupy rallies in major cities across the world, Occupy Wall Street has asked the world to question the condition of humanity on the planet. There have been nearly 7,000 arrests and untold brutality by the Homeland Security-tutored police departments around this country in collusion with this White House. My personal opinion, I think I can back it up, too. This Tuesday, May 1st, or May Day 2012, Occupy Wall Street and all Occupy-affiliated folk are calling for a global general strike. This is the last Sunday of April 2012, and this is Here Be Monsters. And we're asking you today, which side are you on?
Voted out corruption, big corporations.
good workers, this year is our time. Now there's folks in Washington who care what's on our mind. Come on, come on, voters, let's all vote next time. So which side are you on now? Which side are you on?
pretty killer, isn't it, Manny?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good, pretty good. Not the, just the song, but sort of the general national attitude that's picking up.
Yeah, that's Annie DeFranco. Too Cool Stimson wanted us to make sure everybody knew, so I am saying that is Annie DeFranco. Which side are you on? It's a general homage to Pete Seeger. And it's really great, isn't it?
No, it's you know, it's funny. I was just thinking, you know, there's these two great non-corporate singers, and it's so odd that I don't hear them on my corporate radio. That's so unexpected. You know, it's stunning, really. Surreal is what I'm thinking, yeah.
I want to welcome everybody to our last Sunday show in April before General Strike May Day, as I was saying. What'd you think of my intro there, Manny?
I think you did a wonderful job of contextualizing sort of both where we started, how the potential we were just starting to play with, like this amazing power, and then sort of the fracture that happened through the Red Scare, World War One, World War Two, you know. And then we just sort of remembered in the last few years that there's sort of a larger solidarity. And if I could throw sort of a 1.1 version to that, you know, it's funny, there's a Labor Day too, you know. Why do we have Labor Day, you know? Well, it's funny, Labor Day was kind of started as a national holiday to not be in solidarity with the international labor movement. You understand? Like, so it's funny, like, May 1st, in some ways, it's reminiscent that, hey, my struggle here is connected to the struggle of the guy in Mexico or the guy in China who makes the apple product, of the guy in Mexico who had his farm stolen from him, like the guy in Canada who had the farm stolen from him by either Monsanto or who knows what. It's a very similar struggle, and, you know, it's a very powerful thought. Please note how they always try to divide and conquer. You know, it's up there with fire and nuclear energy. Being able to share each other's struggle is very potent, and they'll always try to keep us from doing it.
Quite true. It really is quite true. With me tonight, first up with me here, and hopefully for the whole sale, is Manny Jalonsky, who is a contributor and editor over at The Independent. It's in Brooklyn, isn't it?
It's actually based in the city, but we have sort of a very nice core of volunteers that's based all over five boroughs, Jersey, you know, bigger area as well. So, I mean, we have a tiny office in the city, just like a lot of smaller publications have a tiny office. But, you know, thankfully, our larger volunteer core extends out. So I think we tend to be pretty representative. And we also try to keep sort of an eye on national and international issues. If you read the website.
You do a really good job. Give a plug here. Tell them how to find you, where you are online, and how to do that. Do your commercial.
Well, if folks want to check out The Independent, it's independent.org, independent.org. And I also have a regular column at politicususa.com, Politicus, P-O-L-I-T-I-C-U-S. USA.com. You can also check it out. They're pretty big on Facebook. They're wonderful, wonderful folks. I kind of appreciate their broad left mentality. They have a very nice a sort of bouquet of everything from centrist Democrat to, well, folks like me who lean perhaps significantly left of liberal.
It sounds pretty good. I had on last week actually a pretty traditional, what you would consider traditional Democrat liberal, or what we call now progressive candidate. On his name is Bruce Shuttleworth, and the Democratic machine in Northern Virginia, where he's running for Congress, sort of shut him down by not accepting all of his petitions, saying that he either didn't hand in or they were lost, so he could not get on the ballot. And when he took them to court, which cost him, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to do, to just get to the place where he got them, you know, subpoenaed and a court case brought up very quickly, they found the rest of the petitions. And wow. This happened all in a period of about 8 days or 7 days. And I had him on last weekend, and he reads like, do you read, have you ever read Tom Clancy, the fictional writer?
I'm a nerd. I read a lot of history and stuff like that.
Well, I thought you might have been a Clancy reader because Clancy's research is just exemplary. He will educate you to the military and intelligence community worldwide, including America. He's damn fine at it, and that's why I like to read him. I also like his Jack Ryan hero, and this guy's resume, Shuttleworth, reads just like Jack Ryan. He's a Navy pilot, and he's a straight-laced, traditional, progressive Democrat. And I hit him with questions. And, you know, I asked him about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. I asked him about Bradley Manning. He gave good answers, but the thing was he didn't run away from it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And now, what is that a product of? The system being generous, or us beating on the system's door?
There you go. 100%. And I think him running might be part of it, too. You know, the beating on the door.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, like, the door, the whole freaking cathedral of power, to be honest, we built it, we own it, we operate it, we just don't get to have a say in how it works. And, you know, it's sort of ridiculous, but it's just sort of about, there's nothing wrong with us getting in power and working with us getting into government and not just elected office, but joining sort of a public service or public administration type stuff. Whether from the post office, Department of Health, that's actually really wonderful ways to do public service for a living, you know. And that's kind of an important part of the struggle, too, because in that respect, besides doing the good we can do, we'll realize the good we can't do, sort of. And I think in that confrontation, we treat it like it's negligible, but it's really not, because it's not an accident of the system. We've known each other for years, and we always talk about how, well, the corporate system is very much just like plague colonies with our government. You guys just sort of do what we tell you, all right, cool, work it out. And, you know, when we enter that government, when we see that, like, let's say even somebody who's moderately wanting to reform the system, not revolutionize the system, they're confronted by the institutionalized corporatism. Now, wait a second, you're not really telling the company line 100%. Well, then, you know, that's kind of what we sort of talk about constantly, that it's not just a small fight. You have to fight all the small fights so that we can, you know, move forward slowly on the big fight, changing the institutions that are supposed to be ours. We paid for them. The only reason they have legitimacy is because we say they do. This is how a democracy works. It's ours. It's your toys. It's your grown-up stuff. You know what I mean? And
yeah, I do. I do. I've actually, the last few shows I've done, I've been sort of hammering away at it. The same messaging, because it's about, I think what I was doing was actually I was taking a pot with a wooden spoon and banging out in the front yard, because basically bringing up the awareness again and revitalizing. Down here in South Florida, it's been about, you know, well, are we or aren't we, and everything's been kind of waning, but now that May Day's coming along, it's time to, you know, bang the drum very loudly once again.
Well, see, like, Florida's a wonderful case now. You have at least, what, 7 different pockets of communities that can identify themselves with some individual, probably more. I mean, I'm undershooting, probably. But if I was just looking at the Occupy Wall Street Index, boy, there's quite a few out there, huh? And,
yeah.
You know, like, the real story of this, perhaps, it's wonderful to see the stuff in Occupy Oakland and Occupy New York and Chicago. But, you know, I was looking at one at Kalamazoo, Washington. They're about to do a sleepover at a bank. My Lord, you know, in Youngstown, Ohio,
yeah.
You know, we're talking the small and second, third tier kind of smaller cities with less than 500,000 people. And in some ways, that's something I would not have expected in my lifetime, but it also sort of shows, and I don't mean in any violent sense, but the revolutionarily inclusive. It's revolutionary in its inclusiveness. So in Florida, for example, some people are really focused on actions about the police. Not only protesting, but, hey, folks, did you know you can complain here? This is where your democratic access to the police force and to the government is here. Also for doing the education. Other folks are being foreclosed on in mass, and they're doing actions around that or around banking. And I think that's sort of where the movement is now, a movement of kind of let's go to everybody's struggles because we found out they're all connected. We've sort of all been corporateered or we've all sort of been plundered through, you know, a variety of credit. We can sort of go into a longer history, and we've sort of done this before. But the short and long of it is over the last 50 years, there's been a huge barbelling of the economy where there isn't even a middle class left. So, that, you know, the mirage of the hierarchy is broken as well. And I think that's kind of the amazing story about this. It's not just folks in the major cities, in the traditional liberal cities. It's the amazing amount of sort of broad front resistance to the new corporate reality.
There's a whole new world being born right now, from my point of view. I'm walking the activist pathway as well as a more, you might call it, or actually it is, spiritual pathway at the same time. But I ask you, Manny, don't you vote your values? Don't people vote their values?
Yeah, and I, you know, this is kind of the point too.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, when folks from my side of the street, as it were, would say to me, well, you shouldn't really be involved with activism because that's, you know, it gets violent, it's a part of a world. It's part of the world you're supposed to be rolling your sleeves up and getting involved in and helping. It's called community. It's basically about community, and the most wonderful thing about Occupy Wall Street is they came up and they said, hey, We're gonna attack it where it all begins and where it all ends and where it should end for good, really, is in a system of money, which ain't working here. It ain't working.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, and they challenged them kind of on their home front. The other thing you mentioned that I kind of really liked was the very human challenge, you know, that's sort of been developed here. And I'm not trying to be just sort of like fluffy and for folks who just think this is like, wow, isn't it nice that folks are looking at each other's struggles? Well, no, there's actually besides that, there's like a big tactical win, right? So when
yeah.
we look at each other's struggles, like the lawyer who wants to get involved but doesn't have something locally can go over to a neighborhood where he can. Folks that are a little better educated in the struggle or better educated in the media but don't want to be in the street, can do different things. I'm seeing everything from, and this is like a short list, from Occupy the Rent to training, to not just Occupy the Rent, but also training for housing struggles. I've also seen teach-ins. I'm seeing training
yeah.
to challenge the food cycle. And, you know, here's the thing. You paid for that road. It is your right to tell the cop what to do with it. It's your right to – that is your tax money, and that is both your authority as well. So yeah, whatever the system has that where it confronts us, that's, I think, what's interesting about this. Where the system has confronted us and cheated us, this corporate kind of system, folks are looking at those very points of confrontation and fighting back in each other's struggles. And I think that's kind of what's stronger about this. There's a very human face. They can't take it away in, like, these glib generalities about, oh, it's liberals marching in the streets. No, it's somebody who paid for his mortgage and still got foreclosed on. No, it's a student who got a $40,000 loan, paid $60,000 of it back, and still owes $50,000 on that loan. How the hell is that possible? You know what I mean?
It's about real human stories. Yeah.
And I think that's where the challenge is, because they can't just sort of shove it into a corner and say, well, they're just protesting once more because that's just what they like to do. You know what? I hope we give over to a life of perpetual, popular struggle. And it's not just being in the streets, because we own those streets, and those are our streets, but it's also being in the newspapers, creating media, showing up to those community board things, harassing your politicians, building alternatives with ourselves. Support the co-op restaurant instead of, you know, the place that doesn't pay anybody or that pays sub-minimum wage workers. You know, there's small decisions we can make, and I think, you know, when we're talking about here about the general strike, I think that's kind of where people are, and the best place for us start and the process we need to go through. Like, if you can't get the day off, just find some way to take half a day. Or, you know, don't shop that day. Find some way to absolutely divest from that system that day and invest in some alternative.
It's true. We've been, our group here locally, just a little group, we've been working all through, and this is a thing that has bothered me. I have to, you say, we're turning all of these different groups in different parts of the country, little, big, in, you know, intermediate size. People are turning to the issues of their community and addressing them at the General Assembly. And they're doing these teachings, they're doing these workshops. People are learning about their government much more than they ever knew before. The sense of community grows, and then the people who leave the group go out and share it with other people in the community, their neighbors, everything. It's growing. Another thing that is growing is honest, truth-to-power media. It's a struggle. I'm no radio show host. I do this because my heart and mind are in it until someone who really does it comes along and, you know, has that show that's going to catch everything that I see slipping through the cracks. My regular reason for radio show is to talk about, you know, your aura and your chakras, darling. You hear me? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
I came along to bang a drum and be part of a growing group because the more of us little satellites that are out here doing this, the more chance somebody's going to hear and listen. Everybody matters. You know, I may be a little bit metaphysical about it, but I'm no less physics-wise completely right, you know. Every ounce of energy that goes towards making Occupy successful, goal fulfilled, and in the eyes of America and the rest of the countries around the world that have the media that can broadcast it, well, that's more, you know, that's more ampage, that's more outage. So I would really love to mention here that one of the best of the lefty, the very lefty, socialist grandfather kind of shows that we have on Blog Talk in our little string of shows, Pinko the Bear, a bear, has given up his show for the last 2 years. He's been doing it for 2 hours, you know, most of the weeknights. And it's a struggle financially, and he has to get out there and find some real employment, as they say. Well, you know what? He should be doing exactly what he has been doing and getting paid for it. And so I say, it's a struggle to speak the truth to media, or truth to power, and to have a media that does it. But we have to get it there. We have to keep it up, you know?
Mm-hmm. We do what we have with what we have in some ways, and then we try to build towards what we would have. And you know, we all have sort of our personal space and our personal sphere. But it's funny, you know, in the old world, or like, you know, in the world like a few generations back, sort of the adult thing was when you took charge of yourself in the public sphere. Now, we all have a personal world, and frankly, it's one of my things about, like, people should just, you know, if you want to pierce yourself, or if you're into drinking a lot more liquor than I'm into, or if you have a lifestyle that's different from mine, well, that's in your personal sphere, and you should have that. But, you know, a sort of a mark of just kind of basic adult consciousness is addressing that stuff we share together in the comments in the public sphere. So, you know, I think that's kind of what people are doing now. They're not thinking of this fight as just politically, but also kind of personally, and I think there's a lot of win there. Again, I urge folks to maybe go to the Occupy Wall Street website and see just how massive that directory is, and definitely, you know, don't just go to one action. Go to a few and make a day of it. Bring grandma, bring the kids, you know, bring a camera,
yeah.
Bring a lot of media. Be prepared to be the media that no corporation has any motive in showing you. So, you know, and this is the thing that sort of we're catching on, you know. They've been doing this in France and South America and Africa and East Asia for a very long time now. We have to do habitual out in the street democracy, out in the government democracy, wherever we can. It's an inch, it's ours to fight for. And, you know, I hate that in some ways, I hope I'm not beating the nail on the head too much here, but I encourage folks to really try to get informed about May 1st in terms of local struggles and see if there's something they can't support and see if they can't make a connection there because it's not like the commons isn't just a privilege sort of we inherited. It's kind of a responsibility to it. If we've been, you know, if we let it get over-colonized, it'll come back to bite us in the ass. Proof in the pudding, check the last 30 years.
Yeah, I hear exactly what you're saying there. I'd like to ask you, what are your plans personally on May Day? How are you going to spend it? I mean, you're right in the heart of New York, the Owls territory. What's your plan?
Well, there's official stuff, there's unofficial stuff. I've got mine, I'm hoping to catch, I want to catch like kind of three different motifs. So I'm going to catch a walkout. Because that should be, you know, that's going to lead in a student walkout, and that's going to lead into a march. And that should be interesting just to see that energy kind of hit the other activists and NPR all at once. And I think that's really where the power of the movement is. And I apologize if I'm underscoring this too much. It is in understanding a very diverse struggle and being there for each other that we're building sort of what we want to be in the future. So I'm going to try to catch something like that. And then there's going to be sort of like a mutual aid thing going around at Bryant Park. And I'm definitely going to be checking that out. I'm actually going to try to sort of just sit there, maybe listen a little bit. I think a couple of great activist friends bring this up all the time. You know, if we can't be positive all the time, can we at least try to, like, always address the positive alternatives in at least some part of our conversation? And I think that's going to be a wonderful part of the Occupy sort of activism on May 1st as well. There's going to be sort of, a sort of market, but also a lot of instruction on sort of investing in alternative economies, for community-assisted farming, to co-ops, to how do we turn our failing business that this owner wants to sell into a worker-run co-op, how can we support kind of fair businesses and sort of educating about that. And then in the evening, I sort of want to catch a teach-in. To be honest, and this is kind of what's crazy, there's quite a few options, so we'll see. I'm kind of drawn towards the American heritage, of labor activism and sort of pan-labor activism, meaning across all labor. And it's funny, off the air, you and I were just talking about the power of the populist movement and sort of like millions in dollars spent 120 years ago to sort of stifle it out. And, you know, it's funny, you know, there were bourbon Democrats back then. People should look that term up because, you know, they might find some cogency between that term and our present situation. That being said, you know, I respect our sisters and brothers in the struggle who sort of think that voting is one of the best, most effective ways they can participate in democracy. I would simply say, and I'm always open to being wrong, that we should be aware that the form does not make the thing, and there is such a thing as kind of a wax fruit democracy, you know? It may look a lot like the real thing because we show up to vote, but in substance, you know, or doing anything for us, it's not the actual thing. So voting won't be enough.
I think people are starting to wake up. I would put it to you, case in fact, would be the last presidential election. I mean, a lot of folks have said, well, we actually knew that Obama was going to be a pill. I didn't, and that was my fault. I could have done better research than just read his book and listen to him and not believe what actually labor was saying at the time. Labor was saying, we don't want to support Barack Obama. We support Hillary Clinton. She'll go to fight for us. Barack Obama won't. And he didn't when it came up. They were quite right, you know. I'd also like The moment, I'd like to mention, I'm sorry, I turned a mic on, and I'll turn it back on because Oso's called in. But I'd like to mention that, like you, with your great historical stories there, we have a really great post over at Roundtree 7 right now by Mike Stimson on the movement and labor unions, called Reality Check Labor Unions and the Working Class. Reality Checks, I'm Working Class and Probably So Are You, and it's really a very good post. It's honest, it's to the point, and it brings you to the heart of it, you know? It's one of those great RT7 posts, and we lost Oso, he dropped. I hope he calls back. Anyways, go on, Manny. You were telling me something really great.
I'm actually trying to find it in my notes now. What do you mean?
Well, hang on a minute. I think we have Oso. Oso, are you with us?
Yeah. Hey, Gwen. How you doing?
We're doing.
We're talking about the history. Hi, Oso. How you doing? Very good. Solidarity to you, brother. Good to hear from you.
Solidarity. Thank you very much. We're just busy finishing up building a float for the parade. There's a little bit of noise going on in the background, working on our ticket sign visa.
Well, that's okay. Tell us, what are you going to do out there now? Also, please explain the group, Decolonize Oakland. You're going to be alongside Occupy Oakland on May Day for the general parade.
We're really a kind of a separate thing, although Occupy will be joining in with our march. Our march is basically an immigrants' rights march, and we're going to be marching from the Fruitvale BART Plaza to San Antonio Park, and then we're going to march probably to Oscar Grant Plaza. And so I know Occupy Oakland's got a lot of festivities going on, and probably a lot of them will be joining our march. But we're actually part of a thing called the May Day Coalition, the Dignity and Resistance Coalition, and it's kind of black, brown solidarity and immigrants' rights. Those are really the main themes here.
Okay. So, I heard via Twitter, and I don't know if you've heard, Manny, that the Occupy Oakland group is doing a march on the Golden Gate because the unions are not going to support it.
I hope there's not too much noise here for you guys. But, yeah, you know, I think some people have been talking about shutting the bridge down in solidarity with the unions. But, yeah, I think what the unions are going to do is throw up mass picket lines, and I believe Occupy is going to join them in that. So I don't think the intent is going to be to block the bridge. I think it'll be more along the lines of massive informational picket lines, because I don't think the unions have called a strike yet.
So the unions out there have not called for the general strike with Occupy as of yet for May Day.
No, although they're in the kind of situation where the union leadership, even if they were militant, they can't really call for that, because that would be a wildcat strike and probably a contract violation. But it could very well happen in sympathy, because I know there's busloads of people going to leave from Oakland and also from Central Point in San Francisco who will be converging on the bridge. But as of right now, my understanding is the plan is to support the union with massive picket lines.
Is your feeling that individual members, despite maybe the union's conservative leadership, is your feeling that individual union members maybe feel some solidarity with the May Day action, less solidarity? What's your feeling on like the actual rank and file, if I can ask?
My guess is the rank, or I shouldn't say my guess, my the feeling I get is the rank and file really appreciates the backup, you know, knowing that if they called for a strike and shut down the bridge, the Occupy folks were planning on stepping up and I would imagine putting their bodies on the line. So I believe that they, the show of solidarity from Occupy Oakland is a shot in the arm for the unions. I also think the union leadership is quite likely used it as a bargaining chip. You know, I don't know how serious the leadership has been, but I think that I wouldn't be surprised if there's some isolated action. But the feeling I get is the rank and filers, like so many unions, they're more militant than the leadership. And I think if they were to, maybe do something such as maybe moving picket lines to shut down traffic, I think Occupy would back them up. But the thing is, Occupy is following the lead of the unions here. It might be the lead. You know, does that make sense? In other words, if the unions say, let's block it, I believe Occupy would say, we're down. If the unions say, let's just do the picket lines, I think Occupy is down with that. So they seem to be back in the play of the union. And I think it's a good thing, because if they could put 20,000 people there like we did at the port, you know, you could shut the bridge down, and that would gain massive attention. I know a lot of people would disagree with that. It's a very doable thing with enough bodies. But if you don't have the bodies, you're going to be gassed and arrested.
Wow. Yeah, do you mind if I ask, there's been obviously some overt police aggression out by you guys. What's the feeling sort of among you folks for how the police is going to be, what do you think the reaction is going to be like on Monday? Do you think you'll be able to march to places you have permits? Or have you guys,
Kwan, Mayor Kwan has said that there will not be a reoccupation, but a lot of the Occupy folks do want to reoccupy Oscar Grant Plaza, take it back like they did before. There have been talk of that. I don't know if that's still... I don't know if that was actually planned or more a slogan, and then see what happens. Does that make sense? In other words, there may not be in place a plan to move in and take over the plaza, even though a lot of people would like to do it. But it could happen. The real sticking point, though, is Mayor Kwan has said that it will not be allowed. They can be in there protesting, and, she's talking about the people, saying people can be in there protesting until, I forget whether it's 9 or 10 o'clock, but she said after that they have to go. And I would imagine that if there's still people there, I think the OPD will move in and force. And, they've shown in the past they have no hesitation to use violence, so I would imagine that would happen too, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you don't really know whether OO is going to make a stand there or not.
I don't know. It depends on who you talk to. There's people behind the scenes who are more influential than others. I mean, it's not really a leaderless movement. It's more like a... if you got a family, a grandfather or uncle or aunt or grandmother is an appointed leader, but they, in fact, do exert a lot of influence. So, it's anybody's game. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm just hoping nothing bad happens to our people, our marchers. We're hoping to have thousands of people.
Mind if I ask you one more or so?
Sure.
Or I've heard some pretty open stories about sort of a new guy suddenly shows up to the planning or the coordinating meeting or an action or for a rally, and they show up and they're more militant in speech than sort of the rest of the room. And, they try to sort of anger people up. And they're very random, and they just kind of show up, and either they show up at the rally and they're even angrier or they disappear. Have you had folks had this sort of engagement?
I'm not around Occupy Oakland that much. But, yeah, I do hear that, because there's one guy whose name I hear a lot, Brandon Darby, who had supposedly ratted people out, and they say he's back in Oakland now. There have been OPD who have been at various events and actions trying to spur people to confrontation with either, you know, either breaking things or confrontation with the cops, who've been later proved with photographs, and the cops have admitted, you know, certain ones have been confronted with, they've been under, you know, they've been in undercover. So there's definitely infiltration, and there's definitely provocation, and that's always one thing to be careful of too, because you have a lot of young people who come out and they're desperate, maybe they've got student loans, maybe they're just caught up in the romanticism of the movement, and if some provocateur can spur them on, they can, you know, cause something which would allow the OPD to move in, and they can take a lot of pictures of, you know, showing Occupy people doing violence, because, you know, that happens. I mean, you won't see on the front pages a cop beating somebody up, but you will see plenty of things of maybe one guy broke a window, or, you know, one lady, threw a can of paint at somebody. Those kind of things happen. You know, the mainstream media is going to capitalize on that rather than the real violence done by the police.
That's sure. So what is Decolonize Oakland? What is you're going to march at 6 o'clock?
Yeah, our main thing is we generally just work within the community. We were the People of Color Caucus, and now we changed our name to Decolonize Oakland, and we're autonomous. And we do encuentros, meaning gatherings with the community to try and find out what people want and what people need, and we're gradually expanding here. I think we can be a real force for good, because there's a lot of people here who, there may be a revolution, but until that revolution comes, people of color would like to share in the thing that the middle class has. So we kind of work in those areas. And right now, our march, we're hoping to have 1,000. We've been flyering and leafleting and doing all we could to publicize it. And it's...
You might be surprised at how many people show up to support you.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a lot of people here. We're working on our float. We got a decolonized float, too. It has two flags. One flag is the Spanish Christian thing, like the Nina and the Pinta and the Santa Maria had. And we've got that in flames. We've got it painted to be in flames, and it's going to be lowered. And then we've got another flag of an Aztec goddess, which we're going to put up. So we're kind of getting noticed. People say, oh,
I love it.
You were the guys that were calling us. What?
Are you going to take a lot of pictures, please?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I got to get back to some stuff, hey, Manny, nice talking to you. You take care.
Likewise, also, man. Always great hearing from you. Solidarity from New York, brother.
Thank you, brother. Take care, Gwen. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you also for calling in.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You know, the really wonderful thing is how many different communities are getting together and working so hard, and you see this, and there's a lot of it in Northern and Mid-California, permaculture and training and permaculture interests. A good friend on Facebook, Maureen Venato, she lives in El Saberno, I can't remember off the top, but her community has become self-sustainable in many, many areas. And I think with what we have to face right now on, you know, this, and this is a old thing with me now, is we're on a dying planet because of the industrial, you know, the pollution, the Monsanto. I don't have to go through it. We all know why this planet is in trouble. And it seems that local sustainability is El Sobrante. is where Maureen Bernotto lives, and they are a sustainable community. It seems to me that local sustainability has become primary for us in order to survive all this, Manny. Our technology makes us global. I see a global culture being born right now, don't you? To some of you, look at all the Occupies across the world.
Absolutely, and May Day is going to be a big show of that. It's funny, I have some friends who are activists down in South America, and we have these little email exchanges, and what's profoundly impressive to both of us right now is how similar the struggle the students in Quebec and in Chile and in America are.
You know,
in Quebec, they're getting beaten in the streets. In Chile, they're getting beaten in the streets. In America, they're getting beaten in the streets. And why? Because they wanted a higher education that they need to simply make do in a modern society. And, you know, there's an amazing similarity there. Now, what the other thing that I found amazing is these same students are, independently of each other, developing ways that are very similar. Like, you know, there's going to be a free university, a collective educational experiment from 10 to 3 in New York. Well, that's funny. They're doing something very similar in Quebec. They're doing something very similar in Spain. They're doing something very similar down in South America. Well, that's, I think you're right. There is a global culture sort of developing. And, you know, it's not just like a frill of the movement. It's a necessary part of the movement. Look, capital, global. Capital has no limits on its solidarity with other capital. You notice how ALEC has no problem working with all those businesses together and the Chamber of Commerce. Boy, they sure do have a lot of shared interest across boundaries, across a variety of markets. Well, so do we. And until we have a similar sort of a pan scale or all over the spectrum kind of solidarity with each other, from New York to Thailand, you know, from Thailand to South Africa to South America, until we have that level of solidarity that capital already has, that the bankers already have, that the mining industries and the oil companies already have, until we ourselves have that, of course we're losing. We're not even playing with the same amount of cards, never mind chips. You understand? Does that make sense?
I understand what you're saying. I would put it to you in sort of a paradoxical way, though. The capital, the very capital that you say that the industries and the corporations, well, really, the corporations have, is really based on the industry of all of us,
mm-hmm.
the worker.
Absolutely. Well, and that's kind of the thing. There's a second level now. They've kind of created several bunkings, like, you know, the one thing us leftists and kind of the Paul bots agree on is the way banks can kind of loan 22 times what they have and just create money out of thin air. Well,
oh, yeah.
Know,
yeah, I love
you,
that
you know,
one.
that's just, you know, I'd love to be able to do that. I've got $100 in the bank. Well, no, now I have $2,200 if I lend it out. Well, come on, man, that's bunk. You know, but here's the thing. They've managed to control the rules, too, so that the rules say, no, that's not BS. That's totally legal and sensical and, well, we need to have, you know, we are the workers, but in some ways, this is what's great about the fight. It has to be not just our, you know, the local fight is going to make us global fighters sooner or later. So even if we fight for the stuff we share together in our front yards, eventually we'll see that front yard extends sort of to both hemispheres.
Yeah, I hear you. What's going on right now is so grave. The inequality is so grave. My landlord. She's an executive, vice president of. She's the financial officer of a company that's holding on here in South Florida,
mm-hmm.
and they reduced her salary by half. For her to keep her job 2 years ago. They said, look, we want you, but, you know, we're going to have to hire new because we can only afford to pay half your salary. And a lot of that happened between 2008 and now. to a lot of people who were used to a, you know, $200,000 a year job, and now it's maybe less than $100,000, but their bills, you know, because people extend themselves, their bills.
Well, you know, it's not just folks, you know, we talk about these stories, and I hate that the counter from the right, it's like, oh, it's just an impression you get because you don't understand the economy.
Yeah. Right.
Well, let's look at the consumer price index, you know, how it's skyrocketed, how the price for food and gas has skyrocketed, and yet real wages have dropped, you know, and let me not even tell you about entry-level wages, which should drop like 8%, you know.
Yeah. No.
So if you're like either a young worker or a mid-career worker who is re-entering the workforce or going from one to another, you know, you're either going to have the 40 weeks of unemployment or you're going to be hitting right into this sort of entry-level wage. And you know, the other thing is, then how are we surprised that one in two Americans is either poor or low-income right now? It's like 5 in 9 kids live in those households. You know, how bad has it gotten? You know, there's so many corny kind of impressions of the left that are simply not based in fact. And the thing is, we are right in the numbers. We're not just right in sort of this humanist kind of thing. Well, it's not right let people starve. That's right. But we're also right in the numbers that it's smarter not to let people starve.
Oh, it's true. A few blocks away from me, towards the west, there are several rental sort of streets. And a lot of the Maya migrant workers live in that area. And at night, you have to be careful driving down the street because huge electrical cords reach across the street because neighbors are sharing electricity.
Yeah.
That's reality. That's you know where I saw that? The last time I saw that was, it wasn't in this country. It was way down south. It was in Mexico. But that's very real. There are people who, and their community, I see the moms out there with the children. I live a block away from an elementary school. And it's a really great thing. You get to hear children playing all the time. the moms are taking care of it, and you know they all go to market together, and I've been, because I shop at the same places, and I've been to the what we call the vegetable stand, and if somebody's coming through and they don't have enough, they all pull together and pay the neighbors, you know, groceries.
That's
amazing. And yet that's because they're strangers in a strange land, you know. They're also trying, like the Amalkis down here who are fighting Publix to get paid just another couple of cents per basket for their tomatoes so that they can make a living wage. And it's not even a living wage that they're getting, you know.
Here's the thing, you know. They act like we're just being bleeding heart liberals. First off, that's not an insult. I give a fuck. You don't. That makes you a certain kind of person, and you maybe should reflect on that. You know, first off, bleeding heart liberal is not an insult. Wear that goddamn thing with a crown. You know what I mean? Wear it like a badge of honor. But the thing
right
beyond that is, besides being heartless, it's dumb. It's dumb. Because what's the thing that comes out of their mouth next? How about a tax cut? Well, you know. And I'm talking about, like, we should look at the numbers. There's so many places that have looked at the numbers for food stamps or welfare spending versus tax cuts. For every dollar you spend on, for example, stamp benefits, you get $1.72 back in economic activity. You get, like, $1.03 back or $1.05 for the tax breaks. Look, it's in the numbers as well. It's not just heartless to sort of have this silly 1% dominated economy. It's also kind of dumb and unsustainable, or, you know, less judgmentally, this can't work for much longer without cheating even more people to an unfair and unworkable amount.
Agreed. Agreed. And here's another big problem. I just had this conversation with my younger sister who's, you know, she's like thinking in that lesser than two evils kind of way about the upcoming presidential nominees. And she knows that I'm going to write in my candidate, but she says, you know, what if Romney wins? And I'm like, well, you know what? What if he does? Really? I'm not seeing a big difference. In fact, when George Bush was in office, there were less war crimes going on. Am I right or wrong there?
I think we should do the count, because I think he had a much more lenient sort of setting for him to commit his war crimes. And we haven't even started undigging this war criminal sort of backpack. The other thing is sort of like, for me personally, I think everybody should vote. I just think it's like number 29 on the things you could be doing for you to participate in a democracy. And I also worry about kind of this implication we have on the left that, well, if I vote for this one guy, he's going to change it. If I don't, nothing's going to change. If I vote for this one guy, then I vote for all the horrible things he's done. You're making an HR decision here. And these
yeah.
are your employees, you know. And we can sort of use that as a protest action. We can use that for tactical action. And there's a lot of healthy debates for that. But the one thing I'm concerned about is just too often on sort of the soft left, and I'm not trying to be pejorative here, but sort of on the center left, there is too easy of a thought that this one center guy, the president, is the most important thing. Yeah, how do you do with that Senate when he had the 60-40 on his side?
Right. Oh,
well, now he's got, or, you know, 59-41. Oh, well,
right.
He has to have 60, a supermajority. And then, well, you know, that's what I mean. It's a big game. You got to win at the community board, at the state, at the federal. You got to win at the labor. You have to win at your job. You have to win
yep.
in the food that you eat. It can't come from some poor kid's hands. It's a permeating system that is involved
yeah.
in the way we live our lives and practice both public and private things. So we must change in a permeating way the way we participate in the system. So for me, I almost try to, like, you know, hitchhike my way out of the conversation when I hear these raucous fights among lefties about, how dare you vote green? It's your fault that we got Bush. How dare you vote for Gore? Don't you know what he would have done to South America? Yeah, well, Bush did it anyway. Yeah, well, look what we got, 9/11. Well, you know what? What about all the other stuff we didn't do when we cowed in almost this monarchical obeisance to the executive branch? What the hell was that, leftist and Democrats? You know, this is less than 20% of the struggle. I know it's a cornerstone struggle, but and I encourage everybody to have this debate to as full out as they want. And maybe I have an imperfect view on this, but I am telling you, folks, he is not a freaking king. And we need to stop acting that way. That's your employee. You want to think of him as your CEO, your CFO, CAO, I don't care. You know, administrative assistant in large, whatever makes you happy. But do not make the mistake of putting him on a pedestal and let's anoint him with some golden flag and Christ and all that. This is like a key fight between leftists and rightists for as long as it has existed. It's about democracy and who has legitimacy. They don't get it from being, oh, now you're president. You do. This is why the Republicans will always take the side of hard nationalism, always take the side of hard fundamentalism, so that they can take this, well, we get our authority from God, and the Bible gave its authority to the Constitution. Hell no, buddy. Hell no. A bunch of rich white guys wrote something down that was kind of fair, and the rest of us could sort of stomach, and we've been working on the project since. You know, let's not pretend that the legitimacy is because
it's
sort of
yeah.
rained down from above, and their noble actions of generosity and deigning to give us peons and pledge something. Uh-huh, buddy, this is as little as you can get from us, because if you could take more power, you take more. For the presidency, much like a senator or anything, these are our employees. The name of the game isn't just who he is, but how am I affecting him?
That's truth. Yeah, I hear you. I also keep trying to say, you know, for people who will say, I agree with you in principle, but here's the other side of it is, look who we've got
Absolutely.
In the Supreme Court. And if we get someone like Romney in, look what he'll do to the Supreme Court. And to that, what do you say? There is no argument except that it's all needs to be redone. It all needs to be. It's not working. It's not working. It's not working on the side of humanity. We're killing ourselves. We're committing a species extinction through greed, and it's just the wrong side of humanity. We're being offered an opportunity, I think. Planet Earth, perhaps, it's too much to say, but we are being offered an opportunity to make new choices right now. And I think that the hopes, the dreams, the actions we take, the commitments we make and occupy, and with every protest and every struggle to change, to make it the right side of humanity for humanity, that's our goal right now. I mean, that's the big challenge. And if it takes getting rid of everything in the past that hasn't worked, well, I don't know how that would happen, and I'm not a violent person, so I feel pretty dumb when I get to that point, and yet I know it's correct. You ever been there, man?
Well, honestly, like, we sort of shouldn't ignore the winds we've already built because they're couched in the shit context. Excuse my language, but I know we're on Blog Talk, so I can let it out.
You could
die. We shouldn't, you know, really forget the lessons we've already gotten and the wisdom we've already built, you know? Like, you know, broadly speaking, hey, you know, we got some literacy and indoor plumbing, and you know, we've managed to get universal suffrage at least on paper, and now we're working on making it real and stopping voter caging and all that. Well, you know, in the long run, we've kind of been winning, but the important thing is the perpetual struggle. And the other thing is, the little fights add up to the big fights eventually. You know, we've been reflecting sort of on the Supreme Court. What would have happened if we'd managed, you know, with this president, as centrist as he is, and, you know, as centrist as all of my most left activist friends would say, what would happen if Anthony Weiner had actually managed to impeach Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia, the little Koch puppets? What would have happened? I mean, might we have had some more centrist, not leftist, not even liberal guy, or woman, or place on the Supreme Court? Perhaps, but they wouldn't be Scalia and Thomas. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, one, are we not perceiving this, America? There is a lawyer from Monsanto on the Supreme Court. That
there
this is not fundamentally flagrant to our democracy, you know, that it doesn't stand out to us. Boy, we've gone down the corporate alley quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. My friend, we're a little past our hour. I usually get off. You are a great guest. So was Oso. I hope you come back some more often.
Absolutely, and thank you for having us.
Oh, hey. And today has been about May Day. And what is your closing? Tell me. What do you want people to do, May Day?
Well, if we're worried about what will we build in that better alternative, maybe we should find some of those answers in the way we resist together. And I think if we go out on May Day and look for each other's struggles and look for ways to connect our struggle to other people's struggle for justice and a fair system and a freer life, we'll find that that connection is in some ways instructive of that world we do want to build together.
Cool. That was nice. Manny, thanks for stopping in, being here. Come back often.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. And then, as always, thank you so much for what you folks do at Here Be Monsters and in general with your awesome, absolutely amazing media project. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, you're part of it. And to everybody that's been listening out there, don't forget, May 1st is Tuesday, the second day of the week, the day after tomorrow. Check it out, Google it, find out what you can do. If you're not part of an Occupy group, think about it. Go out and join them, find out what they're about. but it is a general strike. Just don't give the corporations what they want, profit. Deny them profit. Okay, that's us. It's Sunday. This has been Here Be Monsters, Gwendolyn H. Berry in South Florida with Manny Jaworski from New York City. And that's all we got tonight.